Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatre me sadasad rupe pratishiddhe sva samvidha avidyayatmani krite iti tad brahma darshanam yatre me sadasad rupe pratisiddhe sva samvidha avidyayatmani krite iti tad brahma darshanam. Translation: whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The difference between self-realization and material illusion is to know that the temporary or illusory impositions of material energy in the shape of gross and subtle bodies are superficial coverings of the self. The coverings take place due to ignorance. Such coverings are never effective in the person of the personality of Godhead. Knowing this convincingly is called liberation, or seeing the absolute. This means that perfect self-realization is made possible by adoption of godly or spiritual life. Self-realization means becoming indifferent to the needs of the gross and subtle bodies and becoming serious about the activities of the self. The impetus for activities is generated from the self, but such activities become illusory due to ignorance of the real position of the self. By ignorance, self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies, and therefore the whole set of activities is spoiled life after life. When, however, one meets the self, by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. Therefore, a man who is engaged in the activities of the self is called jivanmukta, or a liberated person, even in the conditional existence. Paragraph. This perfect stage of self-realization is attained not by artificial means, but under the lotus feet of the Lord, who is always transcendental. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is present in everyone's heart, and from him only all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness take place. When the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, parentheses, illusory phenomena, the Lord covers a living being in the mystery of forgetfulness. And thus the living being misinterprets the gross body and subtle mind to be his own self. And by the culture of transcendental knowledge, when the living being prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgetfulness, the Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes the living being's illusory curtain, and thus he realizes his own self. He then engages himself in the service of the Lord, in his eternal constitutional position, becoming liberated from the conditional life. Last sentence. All this is executed by the Lord, either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency. A curious ending of that whole. Yatre me sadasad rupe pati shidhe sva samvidha avidyayatmani krite iti tad brahmadarshanam. Seeing the absolute, brahmadarshanam. Translation: Whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. In these first three chapters of Canto 1 Srimad Bhagavatam, a foundation is being laid or established. That's the essence or the basis and support of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam through the medium of these questions and answers. And so many things are in these. In one sense, the whole of the Bhagavatam is in these. You understand these three chapters, that's the whole Bhagavatam. And then the rest of the Bhagavatam is just beautiful elaboration of these essences. The Bhagavatam could end after these three chapters of the first canto. But hearing the first three chapters, then the very expert Shaunaka and the sages ask further questions that result in more answers, that result in more questions and more answers, and the whole Bhagavatam expands in the question-answer format. And something that's here in this little section, and this verse in particular, it enables one, the whole of the Bhagavatam, let's put it this way, the first nine cantos of the Bhagavatam enable one to then properly understand Krishna, and then Krishna appears in the tenth canto, and he performs his activities. Conversely, if one doesn't properly understand the first nine cantos of the Bhagavatam, including this essential understanding here in the third chapter, then when you hear Krishna's pastimes, you're not qualified to properly hear Krishna's pastimes. And equating Krishna's pastimes with us and the rules that govern us, what we can do and what we can't do by morality, what we can do and we can't do by exhibition of prowess, the different personalities that we laud and praise and revere, and who they are in relation to Krishna, like Indra and Brahma and Shiva and kings and personalities that don't have proper understanding or proper regard for Krishna, it appears to such an unqualified person as mythology. Here's a contemporary example. In London, There was one professor who was doing a paper, actually he was writing a book, and his book for the audience of the English scholars and other people that hear from the English scholars was writing a book to explain the misconceptions of Western scholarship upon Vedic wisdom, because there was a long period of time when it was deliberate to poo-poo the Vedic wisdom by Western scholars, especially the British, because the British wanted, Prabhupada explained this, the British, wanted to stay in the position of ruling, parentheses, exploiting India, taking whatever it wanted to take from India, you know, riches and raw materials and exploiting labor and military even. The British, Prabhupada explained, conquered so much. The British Empire expanded through the military strength of the soldiers of India, here, there, and elsewhere. So, in order to persuade those in the League of Nations after World War I that they were doing a good thing, it was to say, we're just civilizing this backward, barbarian group of people. So they had to denigrate the Vedas. It's this barbaric, look what they do in these. So we're trying to civilize them. And then there was a very strong spirit amongst Christians in the West who wished to poo-poo the Vedic culture in various ways because there was competition. Without so much. Sariputta wrote an article in back to Godhead magazine detailing who did what in that history of time, because there were European scholars that were fascinated by the wisdom of the Vedas, and they were going, Vedas are great, and so the Christian influence was the Vedas are bad. Because it was competition. And specifically, their target, the scientific community, their target was two things. And there were proponents that cooked the plan up, and then there were persons that went around and distributed the plan. Two things that are empiric. One, cosmology. Because within the Vedas, there's cosmology, and there's numbers connected to it. And so they were saying, as cosmology becomes more and more progressive, we'll see this Vedic geocentric model of cosmology is rubbish, because everybody that's, you know, after Copernicus knows it's heliocentric. The sun is the center, and the planets move around the sun. And these barbaric people of Vedic culture say geocentric. And we'll show you as technology advances, we can evaluate things more quantitatively better than today, you'll see it's rubbish. And then the other was anthropology. By discovering relics of ancient civilizations, we'll show them this whole thing of dating. It's rubbish. And so, within the Bhaktivedanta Institute and other Vaishnav presentations, pulling out the underpinnings of the views of Western scholarship that was anti-Vedic, purposely anti-Vedic, for the reasons mentioned, that it was challenging their whole house of cards. And the Vedic system, you just pull out one of the cards at the bottom of the house of cards, and the whole house collapses. So they were very, you know, strongly invested. In any case, If one properly understands this, the verse that we just read, a little section that we just read, it immediately follows the list of avatars, which are then in later cantos more in detail elaborated, like Ram building a bridge of stones that floated. Of course, it's mythology. Stones don't float. How can you have stones float to make a bridge for a whole army? And my goodness, an army of monkeys, right? It's mythology, etc., etc., etc. So how to properly understand the forms of the Lord and the activities of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, if we impose material conceptions, because he's like us, of course. Like just this morning, I was hearing, it was a morning walk conversation in Paris. And one devotee, the beginning of the walk, said, one Dr. Bhattacharya has written one book where he said, Krishna was one of us, and over a period of time, he became deified just by, people making up nice things about Krishna and deifying Krishna. And Prabhupada's reply was, he wrote that? Apparently Prabhupada knew the person, contemporary person. And he was silent. He didn't say his usual, this is demoniac, or he's a donkey. But so many superimposing things on Krishna, and those that have view of Krishna as Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, and so on. So how to establish what the foundation is? And the foundation is this proper understanding. It comes to Sankhya, because here we are just in the third chapter. And it's not a detailed Sankhya, but it's Sankhya. It's matter and spirit. And there are categories of matter and spirit. There's gross and subtle. So here Prabhupada has translated sad asad. Rupe, the gross body and the subtle body, the forms of both gross and subtle bodies. Prati shidhe sa samvidha. By the agency of sva samvidha, by self-realization, prati shidhe means nullified. The conception, when the conception is nullified by self-realization, that the gross and subtle forms are the actual self. At that time, avidya, the ignorance that's imposed upon Atmani, the soul, is lifted. And when the avidya is lifted, then one can see the self and the supreme simultaneously. Like when darkness is driven away by light, then you can see, in the Vedic language, you can see pots and plates. You can see things that you couldn't see before. You can see those things in relation to their source. Recognizing the capacity to see is through the agency of light, or in Vedic language, in the Bhagavatam language. Because the Lord sees, then we can see, and otherwise we can't see. But by the influence of ignorance, we think otherwise. God disappears and it's me. I'm at the center. Look out, here I come. I'm the enjoyer. Whoops, you think you're the enjoyer. Let's have a little confrontation here. Who's the enjoyer? And then you have, you know, individuals and groups of individuals and civilizations and nations and people thinking, let's have some war so we'll show who's really the enjoyer. Etc. The whole of material civilization comes about as a result of that avidya. So what to do? How do you lift that influence of avidya? So Prabhupada writes here, however, when one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. This means that perfect self-realization is made possible by adoption of godly or spiritual life. So for adoption of godly or spiritual life, there has to be a guide, like one who knows what godly and spiritual life is. Not one who creates something and says godly and spiritual life is something that it isn't. One has to have a factual, just like our Bhagavad Gita discussion, a tattvadarshi. It's imperative. It's not optional. Sagurum eva abhigach chet. It's in Vedic language. It's abhigach chet. It's imperative. So either you cultivate the word that's in the purport is indifference. The Sanskrit word is nirapeksha. Like in Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, for example, one who sees equally pebbles, stones, and gold. Now, most people don't see equally. Gold is one thing and pebbles and stones is another thing. You walk out the door and you see a whole pile of rupees standing up. Next to it, maybe, you know, some gold coins. And next to that is a few pebbles. We don't see them equally. This has value, that's insignificant. But a transcendentalist sees equally. Equally in the sense that each thing has its utility, so this can be utilized this way and that can be utilized that way, but not becoming... The issue is an issue of proprietorship, and with proprietorship being the enjoyer of that which is our property, and then envy for those that have property that we wish to enjoy, and so on. Ishopanishad, it's about proprietorship. And where does everything come from? Om Purnamada Purnamidam. And once you understand that, Isavashyamidam Sarvam, you live accordingly. Isavashya, God-centered. It's his property and he's allotted something for... So, I've been preparing for this Yatra in Mayapur. As you know, there's going to be some devotees visiting Mayapur. And in the course of that preparation, it's been really wonderful meditating on the places and the personalities. And so one of the personalities in Mayapur that resided there for some time is Jagannath Das Babaji and Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. In relation to Jagannath, to Gorkishore Das Babaji, he is renunciation personified. And although Bhaktivinod Thakur was a grihastha with 10 children, he, Gorkishore Das Babaji, sat at his feet and heard him speak Bhagavatam. And Bhaktivinod Thakur referred to, that the biographies say, Gorkishore as a as a perfect example, the literal example of nirapeksha, indifference. He was radical in his indifference. He was extreme in his indifference. And he was absolutely intolerant of nonsense people who pretended to be renounced and in fact were not renounced. It was shameful. And he let him have it. And he was literally clairvoyant or omniscient because of his degree of... It becomes possible, according to Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita, what is called renunciation, chapter 5, what is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. Real renunciation is possible when you're attached to the Supreme. Say the reverse. When you're attached to the Supreme, you can be detached from the rest. You may use something carefully in Krishna's service, but not with the sense of attachment and enjoyment as the materialist uses something for self-enjoyment. There was a little passage I read to someone yesterday where people would go to visit Gorkhishor Das Babaji, and they would, you know, as culture and custom, they would give something. Some grains. One man, a grain merchant, would regularly give bags of grains and to Gorkhishor Das Babaji Maharaj, and how much grain can one man, you know, need bags of grains, so it was stored in a dharmshala. And one time he said to the man, you know, stop bringing the bags of grains. And he admonished him in part, you know, because he would accept things to give to the Vaishnavas, not for himself. But he saw in the heart of this man some... he was like buying Gorkhishor Das Babaji by giving bags of grains. It was a material... it wasn't just devotional or service-minded. So for that reason, he told others, this is why I said like that. This entrepreneurial, buying, it's a renunciate by giving gifts. But then in reverse, one man came and brought a nice cheddar, and he was examining the nice cheddar and appreciating it. And then another man gave some rupees, and he then tied the rupees in the corner of his cloth. And another man who was visiting noticed. He was feeling in the corners of his cloth to make sure it was secure. And that disturbed his mind. It looks like he's, you know, an enjoyer of this shawl and the rupees in the knot in his cloth. So later he went to Svananda Sukhada Kunj, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was staying, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was also there. And he commented, you know, what kind of sadhu is this? I heard he's so renounced, but I saw this and I saw that. And Bhaktisiddhanta blasted him. You have no understanding of what real renunciation is. He was appreciating the devotion with which something was offered, because he wasn't just the gift, it was the mood behind the gift. And he was thinking this would be a nice gift for some to give to a Vaishnav. Dadati pratigranati. Which is what he did. He gave the rupees and he gave the cheddar to the appropriate persons. He accepted it because the mood was right. And he wasn't for himself. He's abject renunciation. So, indifference doesn't mean we cannot and do not utilize things in Krishna's service. It's yukta vairagya. But when engaging in yukta vairagya, this is Rupa Goswami's term. You know the meaning, yukta vairagya? You know what vairagya means? Renunciation. Vairagya. Renunciation. And yukta means engaging. Engagement in a mood of renunciation. There's jnana vairagya, renunciation through knowledge. And there's yukta vairagya, which is renunciation through engaging in service to Krishna. That's the principle that Rupa Goswami, it's a very important verse in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yuktam vairagya uchate prapancha kataya bhujya hari sambandhu vastana mamukshu vipratyagyo vairagyam phalgu katyate. It's phalgu vairagya. If there are things that are hari sambandha, they're in relation to Krishna, and you give them up, that's false renunciation. It's not yours to give up. But anasaktasya vishayan yatarham apayunjita nirbandha Krishna sambande yuktam vairagya uchate. Very important verse. Nice verse to learn. Yata artham, I don't want to get too far afield from the text here, but yata artham is a very important word. Very, very, very important part of that verse. Yata artham means basically as appropriate, according to specificity. You know, what one's renunciation may not be another's renunciation. It may be too extreme. What Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj's renunciation is for us, too extreme. We couldn't live if we lived the way that he lived. We would die. We wouldn't just like, ooh, it hurts. We would die. We couldn't live. We just don't have that capacity. We go mad. We're discussing this with Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He had this practice, Purushcharana. He would go to the Himalayas and for 3 months follow a vrata that he would eat once in the evening. And in the morning, 3 a.m., he'd take a bath, and then he'd go into a room, and it's one room, and lock the door from the inside, and just chant all day long. And come out at night and take a meal, take rest, take bath, take rest, get up at 3, and just do that for 3 months. And you don't say anything. After 2 months, inadvertently, he spoke to his assistant, so he started it over again, went another 3 months. We'd go nuts. We couldn't do that. I mean, anyway, sometimes Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he didn't personally perform Madhukari. Sometimes his assistants would perform Madhukari, but other times he would just live underneath an overturned boat along the side of the Ganges and would eat Ganges mud. We would become sick. We would, you know, we'd perish. We can't, it's radical. So, yata artam, according to specificity, that which is suitable for one person may not be suitable for another person, and so on. But the principle of seeing things in relation to Hari and engaging them, Someone that has a capacity can engage enormous wealth. Someone else doesn't have the capacity, they'll become enamored by the enormous wealth. So we have different capacities. Like Ambarish Prabhu, the grandson of Henry Ford. He has enormous wealth, but he has the capacity to engage it properly in Krishna's service. I've been in his home, he doesn't live a life of luxury. He has a house, but it's not a life of luxury. And he's giving $30 million to build TOVP, the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Because in a conversation, Prabhupada, in a joking manner, said, wouldn't it be nice? And he took it as an instruction, and here he is. Anyway, someone give someone else $30 million and it'll spoil their life. Factually, they've done statistics. People that win the lottery or those kinds of things. What happens to them after they win? Their life becomes totally ruined. Because they don't have the karma, the capacity to deal with all those. So they turn to addiction of so many things. They become spoiled. And those people that are their friends then become, you know, greedy. And all of their relationships are... And so they isolate themselves and go crazy. It's awful. Don't win the lottery. Of course, we don't do those things anyways. So, back to the verse. Indifference. We may engage something, but we have to be very careful about engaging something, which means we should be perfectly contented to have nothing. And be perfectly contented just in a simple. Then something comes and then with indifference we can think of ways to use it in Krishna's service. There was a Raghunath Das Goswami, like Haridas Thakur, so renounced. Totally renounced. And his family was the wealthiest family in all of India. Whatever, think of a wealthy family's name, Birla, or whatever the family's name. His family was more wealthy, comparatively, during that time. He had no interest. So, one very, very, very wealthy man, this is described in his biography, was going to somewhere in the Himalayas, some temple, and wanted to offer a large sum of money to a temple deity of Narayan. He had a dream. In his dream, he said, there's a sadhu at Radhakund in Vrindavan. Take all of that money and give it to him. So, he didn't know who Raghunath was. Just some sadhu named Raghunath. So he went to Vrindavan. Do you know who Raghunath is? You heard this person? So he was led to Raghunath Das and he offered him all this money. And he said, I don't need any money. But you know, the Lord has a desire. He has a sense of humor and he has a desire. So you can excavate Radhakund. So the man took all that wealth and excavated Radhakund, which today we go and we see Radhakund. But then it was 10 meters by 10 meters. It was little. But nirapeksha, indifference. We use things, but not with a sense of it's mine and be the enjoyer of it. Or subtly, just see, I got all this donation and now I'm doing something with it. So both gross and subtle, being the gross and subtle enjoyers. Indifference. It's the conception of life that we carry, who we are. That's, you know, I and mine, aham and mama. No proprietorship. Krishna is the proprietor, and I'm the spirit soul within. And so as Prabhupada is saying, by ignorant self-interest, this is sva-samvidha. That's where sva-artha is properly aligned. One's real self-interest is Sva-artha-katim hi Vishnu. The real self-interest is Vishnu. There's nothing wrong with self-interest. Sometimes people would say to Prabhupada, you know, we have to become free from selfishness. And Prabhupada would say, no. What's needed, that's impersonalism. We're not impersonalists. We don't say, become an impersonalist. Become nothing. Have no self-interest. We have self-interest. Well, what is our self-interest? It's Vishnu. We're not impersonalists. Vishnu is our self-interest. Pleasing the personality of Godhead. That is our real self-interest. That's the happiness of love. Pleasing the beloved. That's complete renunciation. That's this indifference. But not knowing their real self-interest by ignorance, then self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies. So we need this self-realization in order to get beyond that one, the asad rupe prati shidhe sva samvidha. So that self-realization leads to, or its companion with, God realization. And then when we hear the incarnations of the Lord presented in the earlier part of the chapter, or expanded further in the 9 cantos, or in the 10th canto, or in Ramayana, or in Mahabharata, we can have the proper understanding. And otherwise, you know, things are metaphors or similes or mythology or gobbledygook. A mess. Hodgepodge. And there's a lot of hodgepodge. We all know it. So, and we're influenced by it because, you know, that's been the pablum that we've taken since childhood. And who knows how many lifetimes. So we need a very clear indication, instruction, of how to see things, matter and spirit, properly. We need to be acting in as devotees, Hare Krishna devotees today, with self-realization, with understanding that the things of the body and the things of the mind really are not me. I may do something in relation to the body, in relation to the mind, but it's not me. That's not my real self-interest. I may do because it helps my real self-interest, but it's not my real self-interest. And if something goes wrong in the body and mind category, I tolerate it because it has nothing to do with me. I just accept it. So here comes a storm. And that wait a while, the storm is gone. There's a big hurricane that just blew into the whole east coast of the United States. There are devotees that are coming to the yatra, can't come to the yatra because they shut down the airports. That's disappointing. But, you know, after some time, they'll reschedule the flights and they'll come. So you, what can you do? You tolerate. Tongues to tiksha subharata. And take that, instead of getting so absorbed in the temporary, illusory covering, born of ignorance, yuck. You withdraw that consciousness and place it in sat. And you do that. That's the spiritual culture. Self-realization is made possible by adoption of godly or life. When one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. Then he speaks, last thing, he speaks about this mystery of forgetfulness. I'll read the sentence again, it's really nice. When the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, illusory phenomena, the Lord covers the living being in the mystery of forgetfulness. And thus the living being misinterprets the gross body and subtle mind to be his own self. The real activity comes from the self, spiritual or material. It comes from the self, the real self. But by this covering, krite here is being translated as having been imposed. Avidya is imposed. It's not who we really are. There's a fire and you put a wet blanket on top of the fire. It just smolders underneath. Now, the fire underneath a wet blanket could go out, but the soul doesn't go out. It stays just covered by avidya. And it's really uncomfortable being under the covering of avidya. But it comes because of this misapplied free will, wishing to be independent enjoyer, falsely, foolishly. And take away that falsely, foolishly, then the forgetfulness can be removed. Krishna's in the heart and he sees, so he can remove. It's really nice. There's a discussion when Devahuti first speaks to Kardama Muni, no, Kapila Dev. She says to Kapila Dev, her husband has just left. She's been with her husband for like 10,000 years or something. She got really attached. And he was such a good husband. And she was such a good wife. And she became really attached. And 9 daughters and 1 son. And then that, as promised to Swayambhuva Manu, he would leave. And he left. Show by example to live his life in complete dedication to the personality of Godhead. Although, ironically, even the personality of Godhead was his son. Still, he left to teach by example. And then, though, so there's Devahuti feeling miserable because her husband just left her, and woo, 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 feeling the blues, feeling attached. And she said to her son, because of my attachment to the body and the bodily's relation of family, my mind is bewildered. And I'm suffering, and this is all due to your illusory potency. It's yours, so please remove it. Exactly what's being said here. So that's prayer. Then that's not just pray, do something. Okay, here's what you should do. And then you do that something. So that the ignorance, the avidya, can be removed and be situated in knowledge instead of ignorance. Transcendental knowledge, devotion to Krishna instead of ignorance. That option is available when Krishna sees, being quoted here, in the paraphrased in the purport, he, situated in the heart, he gives remembrance and takes away the forgetfulness. Just like that. Just like that. So people say, well, if Krishna can do just like that, why didn't Krishna do just like that? Because we want the ignorance. Meaning, we want to be independent enjoyers. We want the kingdom of God without God. So we come to this place. Hyderabad, the kingdom of God without God.
Maharaj, considering that the speaker or the writer of some literature is pure and he has a full, clear conception of Krishna, and the audience is not very envious but somewhat okay. So in this situation, can you describe what is the significance of carefully studying till the 10th canto? Because I don't find so much of difference between like 3rd canto.
You don't find so much what?
Difference in 1st canto, 4th canto, 9th canto, because it's all topics related to Krishna. And that.
Well, you know, to answer your question, it would take, you know, volumes. It's trust, Vyasadeva. He knows how to present things unfolding in gradual sequences that can elevate conceptions and consciousness to the position where, receiving the 10th canto, you don't make the same stupid mistakes that the professional reciters make. So, the subtleties of how the Bhagavatam, say it again, the subtleties of how the Bhagavatam unfolds in such a way it's like a blossoming flower. You may not understand how the blossoming flower unfolds, but just go start at the first canto and put water on the root and it'll happen.
And another thing, Maharaj, how do we understand, like, even in our movement, topics related to Krishna being spoken, and I personally many times feel uncomfortable to hear topics related to, like, the 10th canto topics. Why, like, when Prabhupada is saying like this, it should be gradually discussed. Can you explain how to respond to such situations?
Yeah. Read in the Krishna book, or read in the Lamrita, Prabhupada's explanation of why he presented Krishna book. And it can be presented in such a way that the foundational understandings are there. And then, assisted by those foundational understandings in conjunction with hearing, then one is protected. Otherwise he wouldn't have done it. But he did it. And not only he did it, but, you know, you look in the, right here in the first canto, and Bhishmadev speaks about Vrindavan, and Kunti speaks about Mother Jasoda, and, you know, it's right in the first canto. You know, little drops, but it's there. If the speaker is the right speaker, and not the wrong kind, then the leelas can be presented in such a way that one can become edified rather than bewildered. So more important, I'll just say it this way, more important than what is the particular topic that's being narrated, and whether you're safe or vulnerable, is to look at, based upon the topic, look to the speaker, and is the speaker qualified or not qualified, and then they'll know how to present in a proper way. But when there's an inordinate emphasis upon the others, it's not a good indication. Okay. It's this yours? Material body of this particle soul does have gross and subtle bodies. Is there aspect of subtle body? I guess there should be an aspect of the subtle body in the Virat Rupa, or material body of the Lord, for our understanding. I don't understand the question. If I get what's being said here, I discussed this yesterday. There's the universe, like, you know, the earth and the sky and stuff. And then there's the Virat Rupa, for example, that was exhibited to Arjuna, which he couldn't see unless Krishna exhibited it. But there was the Virat Rupa. But there was already the earth and the sky and the mountains. And then there's the virat rup. So gross and subtle. Like that, gross and subtle, if that's what you're saying. Yes, they're one is just as we have a gross and subtle body. There's the gross form of the universe, and then there's the virat rup, which is also the form of the universe, but in a subtle aspect. But from the subtle comes the gross. Upon the subtle, the gross is manifest. I'm not sure I'm addressing the question, but we're going to end. Go greet the deities. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.